I don't know if it's a good sign or a bad sign, but just as I was waking up today, I had a on taking pictures stress dream.
What?
I swear to God.
Why?
I had a dream that
opening for Jacob Collier and had to play the tune live, and he was like, what is this?
That would actually be pretty funny. I actually don't know that I could do that if you sat me down at a piano. I'd have to figure it out again. That you and I had set for 9 a.m. and that I got up at 8 a.m. and I was sitting for some reason editing audio in Logic with my mother. And then I realized that it was 9:40 and I had missed our time to meet up. And I was like, oh,
Billy,
crap.
That EQ is way off. Billy, no.
Pretty much, yeah.
Billy, why are you using so much reverb? Stop it.
Yeah. Mother, if you'd like to comment on Jeffrey's impression of you.
I don't know that I've ever heard her speak. Maybe I have. Have I heard her speak?
I don't know. I've probably.
I just imagine her.
Oh, yeah. You met her in D.C.
Of course. That's right. But I imagine her referring to you as Billy.
She does. Well, yeah. She does when other people are around. Yeah.
It's, when she got angry with you, would she call you Bill or William? Or like, what was her angry?
I think Billy would be, it would never be William.
Really?
I don't think so. No, it would never get William. Because my father's name was also Bill. So, you know.
Yeah. My mom went, boy, it was, if I heard Jeffrey Allen. Oh,
the full name thing. The old. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, anyway, welcome to On Taking Pictures. This is episode
your real-time stress dream.
This is episode 364 of On Taking Pictures program. And it is Wednesday, not Tuesday, because we had to shift today this week. But right. We'll be back to Tuesday theoretically next week.
Unless Bill has another stress dream, and then who knows?
All wait hell a minute, don't put this on me. Yeah. What's going on? How you doing?
Hey, I don't know what's going on, but I do know I read something.
I have no idea. I'm completely out of the loop. But
I read this morning on Mac Rumors, which is one of the sites that I tend to go to a lot. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there is the potential of a TikTok Photos app to compete with Instagram readying for launch just at the time when the U.S. Congress is considering banning TikTok altogether. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that Instagram is actually for photography anymore? I mean, with the stories and with the reels, I bet you those get 70% of the traffic nowadays.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty far afield. I mean, it feels like photography is like, oh, that's cute. You're sharing a still photo.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
You know what I mean? Yep. It feels there's a quaintness to still photos on Instagram because of how they are prioritized or deprioritized, I guess.
I think that is entirely true. Yeah, I don't know. It's I don't know if any new thing is the answer. OK, so we all move over to TikTok and there's a 4 trillion photos a day over there, you know.
Well, I mean, is there still the same kind of. OK, two questions. Okay. Is there the same impetus to share photos as there was, I don't know, 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, the types of things, are we sharing for the same reasons? No. If there is, are we sharing for the same reasons that we were 10 years ago? I mean, I remember, let's go back, and you probably have similar memories of this. That's very good. You know, 2006, 7, 8, 9, in there.
Sure.
Sharing to Flickr, because Flickr was the king of the hill then, right?
I was never a Flickr person, but yes, Flickr was the king of the hill. Yeah.
But it was, I mean, I remember, because I was teaching Photoshop, and it was a way to digitally pass our cameras around after a photo walk. Or after a weekend, it wasn't to get juice. It wasn't to, you know, to get followers and fans and brand deals. And
sure.
And, it was just, it felt, man, this is gonna, we're old, Bill. It was a shared love of the medium, I think. It felt more like that than it does now.
And I mean, I'm sure there are people still doing that, right?
Yes. I mean, Flickr is still a thing. Are any of the others still around, 500px and all that?
Yeah. And somebody was telling me,
There's a new app too.
Was Chris Photos. Connors telling me about some other one that he was on? Somebody else was telling me about a thing they were on.
There are a couple new ones. There's one called Cosmos. That's okay. A new one.
Are these paid or these free? Or this,
I think they're paid. I think they're all paid now. They've realized that
you're not going to be able to do it for free.
There's too much involved. I don't know if there are staff members.
What was Flickr's business model that you were going to upgrade to paid?
Yeah, Flickr Pro.
Yeah.
It gave you, I think it was unlimited at the time. Or that's how my memory was. Maybe that's wrong, but there was a limitation on the free version. Maybe you got group access with the pro version. I always loved the groups.
Okay.
I made some really great connections with people, and there was a bummer from an admin standpoint. If you started a group and you wanted to disband that group, they didn't allow that. You could leave the group, but then you had to name you couldn't just close down a group. Once a group was created, it was created. That was it.
That's actually a pretty good idea, because then some admin can't come and ruin the party for everyone by saying, I'm out.
Yeah, right. I'm taking all my photos and going.
I think
going
what you're saying, though, is that back in the day that the communities were more personal, maybe.
Well, I mean, think about the G+ group around OTP.
Sure. Right.
That wasn't for juice. It was people. I mean, people became friends in real life. People went and visited one another in different cities and different states. Yep. It was a snapshot, you know, pardon the pun, but it was a snapshot in time of, I think, what the potential for a photo community could be. At least that's how I remember it. And I don't get that same thing from Instagram now. And I don't know that I ever really did on the same kind of personal level that G+ or even Flickr before it was.
You know what it kind of feels like? It's first of all, there was less of all of this, right? So the volume just wasn't as much, right? Mm-hmm, but that people now, and this is, you know, broad strokes here, tend to, I mean, I guess you could curate the people you follow and the people who follow you and in that way control it. But it almost feels like everyone's just walking down the street where all of the stores are on the sides of the street. And if you don't see it in the window, then you're not going to look at it. But back in the day, people used to go into a store. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and poke around a little. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, sure.
And I mean, that's a choice, but I think it's as much to do with just, I think it's just the amount of everything. It's just so overwhelming that you can't possibly, if you go and spend time digging into this little thing, you may miss all of that thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You miss everything that happened while you were inside the store out on the street. Now, is any of that worth anything? I don't know. I mean, before I go to bed or if I wake up in the morning, sometimes I'll just flip through some stories, right? Like everybody does. Ugh, got to stop doing it. And then,
especially before you go to bed.
This is usually after I wake up, but
before
I go to bed, although I don't have a problem sleeping, unlike some people in my family. I don't know what it gets me. Do I see cool stuff sometimes that I'll send to you or send to Conrad or send to my mom? Yeah, sure. If I didn't see those things, would my life be any different? No, not at all. Personally. Do those things that I see make me happy? Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly all created, machined, whatever, for dopamine hits and satisfaction and all of that, right?
Okay, let me ask you though, did you feel differently earlier on? Did you feel differently about it looking at the G+ group, for example, or Flickr or any of the other services pre, you know, last 5 years or even 10 years of Instagram.
Well, let me just flip that. Do you think that if the On Taking Pictures G+ group was not our group?
Yeah.
Would you have jumped in and followed it? Or did it have something to do with the fact that it was the listeners of our show?
I think so, because there.
Because I'm sure there are those things out there, right?
Maybe I'm sure that there has to be, right? I just don't go, you know, I'm to use your metaphor, I'm walking down the street. I'm guilty of not going in either.
Yeah. Right.
Right. I'm sure those things probably are out there. Are they behind a paywall? Maybe they are now. And maybe that's why I haven't engaged.
And does deciding, having everyone else decide what gets upvoted and what you end up seeing in your feed because X people have stopped and looked at it. Well, what do I get then? Well, I get, you know, hot women putting on exercise clothes and getting on an exercise bike, you know, an ASMR thing, which is what showed up in my feed this morning.
I've seen a photo.
Oh, yeah. It's like some triathlete woman. Oh, not a photo. It was a video, but it was like, you know, it was like ASMR, like I get home from work and I put on my, you know, sexy workout clothes and I get on a bike. I'm like, what is this? This is what people want?
Maybe the camera is always on your phone and it knows you're always on the rower. So it's like, okay, he's a rowing guy. So we're only going to show him like
exercise people
fitness. And they look at your feed and he's like, okay, he photographs a lot of ladies. So we're going to
shoot
ladies plus fitness equals ASMR girl getting on bike or something.
I watched 15 seconds of it and then I caught myself and I was like, what? And actually I clicked on the woman's, her actual profile. And I looked at the other videos just trying to see like, is this all this woman does? Yes. It's all that woman.
It's all they do. Wow. Okay. Well,
and,
I mean, there's a market. I mean,
they have
market,
half a million followers and all
half
kinds of
million followers
and all
for
kinds
getting
of,
on a bike
and all kinds of sponsored nonsense and whatever. And you know,
wow.
And like, and I guess
I
that's,
have a bike. Hold on a second.
I don't think it's going to work. Show title. but I guess, you know, but are these people, you know, Leo said something the other day because he was talking about his son, you know, has millions of followers on TikTok and then he's transferred it all over to sort of Instagram, whatever. But he was saying that.
Why does Leo Laporte's son have? Is he a photographer?
He's a cook. His name is Salt Hank. He makes sandwiches.
Oh,
he's got literally millions of followers. Like he's one of the. He's made a whole thing.
I know how to make sandwiches.
Well, then you know maybe you should do this. Do you have a mustache? The guy's got a mustache. Anyway.
No,
he realized when he started doing cooking, he was always into cooking, but he got into cooking, started doing these videos on TikTok or whatever. And then he noticed that the ones that got the most traffic were sandwiches. People wanted to see sandwiches, nothing else. So all he does
is
make
sandwiches. Eating them or him making them?
Making. So all he does is make sandwiches. And now he's Salt Hank and now he sells special salt and he does this. And he has like, you know, he makes $80,000 for doing a paid sponsorship with whoever, whatever the thing is. Right.
Wow.
But he very much, he was just pointing out how his son tuned his content to what the algorithm pushed. Right.
Mm.
You know, and I'm sure this woman is doing that. I'm sure there's lots of people who are looking. They know exactly what the algorithm likes. They know exactly how to, you know, the longer you look. So I'm going to slow down that shot of the woman unzipping her dress or whatever it is before she puts on her workout clothes or whatever it is. Right.
But I feel like that goes. Okay,
I know.
Go ahead.
I guess my point is, can you blame them?
If that's the your hustle, no. Yeah,
well, right. But if this is the community that you're jumping in on a thing that used to be, I guess originally ostensibly about sharing photographs, right? And yes. Now it's about ladies getting on exercise bikes.
But we've gone from sort of follow your curiosity and follow what interests you to follow, you know, certain people. And I know a lot of people in my follower group or not follower, the people that I follow, they're still posting a lot of the stuff that they're into and that they want to, I, this gives me anxiety, right? The idea of, well, you know, and I know a couple of photographers, honest to God, I know a couple of photographers who they will put things up and if it doesn't click, if it doesn't get a lot of traction, they'll take the photo down and put a different one up.
They actively take it down.
Yeah, they're watching
because if it's up there and it didn't get a lot of traction,
must not be good.
It must not be good, or that it would actually actively take down their
one or the other. I don't maybe that's true too.
Yeah,
but I know a couple photographers for whom that is true, that they will watch the metrics and if it doesn't get a lot of likes in the first hour or two, down it comes.
Yep.
And a different one will go up.
Yep. And I mean, I don't By the way, I found the woman, so I'll put it in the show notes. But I sent you one of these just to give you an example of what I'm talking about.
No, because then it'll be in my feed. I'm not going to watch it. No, thank you.
But I guess, you know, so Instagram is no longer a thing about photos. It's no longer a thing about photographers. It's no longer a thing about taking pictures of your food. It is a piece of life, right? Is it a snapshot of where Instagram or their algorithm or the people on Instagram want the world to go? They all think they're going to be triathletes who get home from their high powered job and look great and have perfect skin and a $50,000, you know, bicycle, and are going to go do. Is that what it is? Is it all a big fantasy?
Well, I mean, okay, so that's a great question, and it's a perfect lead. And you sent me this thing. I'm not going to click on it, but I will look at the thumbnail. And you know, this it's impossibly perfect marble floors and this gold encrusted gilt, you know, yeah, couch and
Trump-esque, you know, yes.
Oh, I didn't want to say it, but yes. You know, it looks like that could just be a set that mm-hmm. has been dressed to you know, and she's got her coat over the arm of the sofa, and she's putting down a bag of, I'm sure, some very expensive bauble that she just caught her eye on the way home from work because, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That feeds perfectly into, you know, kind of what we were going to talk about later on about AI. Like, is this any more or less real than what AI is generating? I don't
maybe what we want as humans.
Yeah.
Is this weird, perfect fantasy? And to some extent, AI image creation is just the next step of all of this. It can make it even more perfect than the most perfect thing that we can make in real life. And so,
but then
therefore,
on the other
we're
side
drawn
of
that,
it's even less real.
Of course it is. But this woman's life is probably not real. Or at least, you know, I'm sure she, you know, she's a triathlete. She actually bikes and runs and swims. And I'm sure she does all that stuff and she trains and it's great. Good for her. But like, you know, that is not her whole life. You know, her whole life is not just like, you know, trying on cool stuff and, you know, you know,
yeah.
Like, it certainly can't be the life for everyone.
It just feels really strange. Like, look, I love movies. We both love movies, sure. Right? The Oscars were this weekend, and you see the little featurettes about the people getting ready. Or they spend the day
sure.
getting yeah. ready to go to the Oscars, and yeah. they've got their teams of people.
Yeah.
They got a
5
team
a.m.
for the
they
hair.
Started doing their hair. Sure.
Yeah, and they got a team for the skin, and they've got to be sewn into the clothing in some cases, and everything has to be just so. And it's like, oh my God, like yeah. there's. It's almost that there's too much make-believe.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we don't have to get into it, but I went and saw the Dune 2 the other day. And with the girls, just because they wanted to go see it. And so I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go. So I went and saw it. And, you know, I love my Rebecca Ferguson. I think she's beautiful. And
she's terrific.
She's a good actor. And I think she's great.
Yeah, she's terrific.
It made me realize that, you know, Rebecca Ferguson came into my world when I saw her in the Mission Impossible, I don't know, 7 years ago or whatever it was, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. she was in. Mm-hmm. Before that, I didn't know who she was. She was just like, oh, the new actor in the Mission Impossible movie, right?
Yeah.
Right.
She's in a BBC thing,
yeah, right.
The White Queen, I think it's called.
Right, exactly. So, but I will tell you, Jeffrey, when I see photo shoots of her or her on a red carpet now or her doing whatever it is, she looks better now than she did 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that only happens if there's a lot of money and energy and, you know what I mean? That's a creation. Not that the woman's not a beautiful woman. I'm not taking anything away from her, but like there are people processing her image. You know what I mean? People working on her hair and doing her clothes. And she probably has personal trainers now, and, you know, et cetera, right?
Yeah. It is, I mean, you could say the same thing probably for Timothée Chalamet or Pedro
exactly.
Pascal or
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, these people, when they're not dolled up, do not look the way you want to look when you say, yeah, I want to look like her.
Yeah. I've seen Bradley Cooper, pictures of Bradley Cooper walking the streets of New York. He didn't look like he looked like, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But like, but these are, you know, there's so many people and this is media and famous actors and all of this stuff has been a thing for 100 years. I'm sure beforehand it was, you know, somebody else in that situation, right? Or you wanted to be the princess because you saw a painting of her, you know, or whatever it is.
Sure, sure, sure.
But I think now there's this sense that it's like you too can achieve this absolutely abstract, ridiculous thing of being Rebecca Ferguson. It's like, well, first of all, she's a stunning person anyway, right? Like even just walking down the street, you'd stop and stare at her and be like, wow. But then you pump her up with a team of 15 people, you know, and these people become superhuman. They become real world AI pictures to some extent, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Kimmel said something about Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. Like you guys already won the genetic lottery.
Exactly.
Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. Right. But not all of us can be these people. And you know what? Those probably people don't even feel like those people. How many people who look like that end up, you know, on drugs but or what whatever? It's like, okay, it doesn't bring happiness, but people think that it will because that's what people are chasing.
Right. But why is perfection, I guess, you know, you've seen this with Midjourney.
Yep.
That they're trying to make the perfect representation of the perfect looking person. And
I will tell you right before we started, I went on to Midjourney and I asked it to make me a picture of a podcast photography basement studio.
Oh no. If this looks like where I'm sitting, I'm going to be very upset.
I just sent you four pictures. Mm-hmm. And
oh my God, it's not far off. Oh my God.
I knew it. Yes. And actually all of these are four really amazing.
Hold on. Checks surroundings for cameras.
Exactly. Now the point is that like if I was, you know, what's weird about the first one? There's sand on the floor. Did you see that?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, because we don't get outside, so we're going to bring the outdoors inside.
But I look at these, and not only are you know, they are odd and weird and actually kind of cool.
They're awesome. Oh my gosh!
And
look at that fourth one with all the like computer the speakers and the keyboards and speakers. Like, yeah. I would never leave that space.
Well, okay, so here, LPs, right? There's like, yes. You know.
Oh,
okay.
My God, these are great.
So now this was just literally me typing. I think, wait, let me pull up my actual prompt because, you know, I want to.
So this is just straight no chaser out of Midjourney. What is it, version 6? Is that up to
Yeah, whatever the latest version. I literally wrote podcaster photography nerd basement. And that's what I got. Now, if I was, for example, making a movie that involved, you know, remember the Die Hard movie where Kevin Smith was in the basement, you know, the one where he's playing the like the nerd guy. Do you remember that one? If I wanted to if I was a director of a movie and I wanted to explain what I wanted the basement to look like for the set dressers.
Oh, my gosh. This is your previs right here. Like,
yeah,
build me something like that.
Yep.
Now, phenomenal.
Right. That is a useful use of it because it's just sort of a shorthand communications version of this is basically what I want. Go do something like this or sketch me out something like this. Or I don't like the sand floor, but it's actually kind of cool with that chair there or whatever. Like for that kind of use, it's neat. The thing is, me typing in that prompt and getting this image and sending it to you, this is not photography.
Right.
It's not even image making because I'm not making the image. It's, you know what I mean? It's a weird, and I don't know what your experience has been on this, but you know, did I show you the things I did with the lady in the tree?
I don't.
Okay. I had an idea.
Was it recent?
Yeah. Well, maybe I didn't show it to you because we were going to wait till this thing, but I had an idea waking up one day where I said, I'm just trying to think of crazy things. A wide angle shot of an Asian woman pilot flying the Wright Flyer, but she flies it into the top of a tree. So she's stuck in the top of a tree. That was my like initial idea.
Got it.
And now these things, you can put in 15 different things, but really after the first four or five, you're not going to get any of the rest of them because they're limited. They can't actually make you specifically, right? But the first thing that I got out of it was not a Wright Flyer, but it was a cool looking Japanese pilot lady stuck in the top of a tree inside of a banged up airplane.
Oh, that is kind of cool.
Right.
Yeah, that is kind of cool.
Now, if you zoom in on it, you'll notice she has four fingers on her left hand.
Right. Yeah, you can see that.
And her eyes are a little wonky. Right. So, like, there are things.
But as previs, for you then to go build this shot and shoot it.
Yes.
That's kind of interesting.
Right.
Or maybe to take you in a different direction.
But if you told me, and maybe I can put these in as the images when we're talking about these things you can swap out the show image. But the thing is that if you told me I needed to take that shot, that sort of that glossiness, backlit really nice, filled nice in the front, like all of that, this would be very hard to make look like this.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm. So to some extent, this is better than I could be if I actually had that woman in a plane in the tree. It's like an idealized version of all of that.
Yeah, it's also setting up unfair expectations.
Yes.
I mean, it's ramping up the expectations of what the physical counterpart can produce.
Right. Like that basement. Wow. If you actually wanted somebody to make that basement, that would be expensive.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it would be.
It would be really just to expensive. Get all that crap. You know?
But you know what? Worth it.
Has it been? Has it been worth it for you?
I'll let you know the sand arrives this afternoon.
I don't know. I mean, what's your experience, Ben?
I haven't used a lot of it. I've done a couple little things with Stable Diffusion, just as, you know, like Adrian and I have had this idea for a product line, a lifestyle brand kind of thing. And I used it to generate some ideas for bottles. And it gave me ideas that I hadn't thought about. It did some little things that I hadn't considered. Nothing that I would use as a final product, but it certainly was able to your point earlier, to take me in different directions.
Yes.
And I think that's where it can be useful, but we have to remember and we have to acknowledge that this is all on the back of other people's work.
Yes.
Right. And we're seeing now there's been a spreadsheet document leaked of like 16,000 artist names whose work has been ripped off to train Midjourney.
Yep.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, I heard about it. I didn't read it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's
here we go. Database of 16,000 artists used to train Midjourney AI, including 6-year-old child.
Yeah. So, you know,
Cy Twombly, Warhol, Kapoor, you know, Gerhard Richter, Frida Kahlo, Warhol, Ellsworth Kelly, etc.
Yeah. So we have to kind of acknowledge and remember that this stuff isn't being created in a vacuum. It's not being created from nothing. And sure. I think that's where.
And if people.
That's where
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was just going to say that's where the sort of humanness comes into it.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I can be influenced by someone. I can be influenced by the people who I find to be my artistic heroes. But there's a thing that happens that I think at the moment, will it get there with AI? Maybe, but at the moment is uniquely human. And one of the things that we used to come back to, you and I, is those scenes in Pollock where you've got Pollock and de Kooning, you know, and that whole group of guys sitting around talking, going and looking at each other's work, trying to figure out what to say and what a voice looks like. That kind of stuff is impossible at the moment.
Yeah.
Right. From AI.
And, you know, right. AI is doing a mashup of everything humans have made before, right? Is basically
instantly,
what it's doing.
Or near right. instantly. Yeah.
And are there a lot of human artists and writers and everything else that are basically just doing that themselves? Yes, absolutely. Are these things better than probably half of the humans who are doing these things? Yeah, absolutely. It shows you that we should basically, you know, we could remove the bad humans from doing this stuff. The problem is that without new humans making work and making a living making work, there's no more input for this thing to output. So this stuff will just stagnate or start looping on itself.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's, I was talking about this the other day too, and said, you know, if somebody said to me, OpenAI, the company, was open source and free, and that was the whole point of it, and no one could make any money from it. So let's all put our stuff in there, and then we can all reap the benefits of what could possibly come out of it, right? That is an interesting thing to me, but that's not what's being said. What's being said is, you need to give us all of your stuff so that other people can use it. And, oh, by the way, we're going to make money on that,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a totally different thing, right? That basically, as my friend I was taking a walk with the other day, it's like, we'd like to take everything you've ever done for free and then sell it back to you.
Yeah, right.
right?
Kind of, yeah.
But you
hit on it. You hit on it just a minute ago. Without more input, the output very quickly, relatively,
yeah,
becomes homogenized.
Right. But everyone, you know? there will be people who would say, yeah, but we're not going to stop taking pictures and making paintings and writing stories and whatever it is. But let me tell you something. The people who do it really well generally do it professionally and for a living. And if they can't do it for a living, they're not going to do it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if I have to get another job because I can't make a living being a photographer, then I'm not going to be taking as many pictures. And therefore, right. you know, if you would like to train your AI off of, you know, the people taking pictures of their dumplings every day, great. You know, but I don't think that those aren't the people on the list that I just read off.
Yeah. And again, without the outliers, without the new input coming in, I remember Chris Matheson did, I think it was him that did this, where he took a photograph and took a picture of a section of that photograph and blew it up, and then took a picture of that, a section of that result, and kept going. And it didn't take very long before it was just gray. There was no detail. It was just bleh.
It's a good idea.
You know, and I think that there is something similar that could happen with what you're saying. If there's no additional sort of human input, at least until maybe there is a sentient AI that can generate and feel fear and love and hate and anger and envy and all that kind of stuff. Maybe there is. I don't know.
Yeah.
If there is, I don't know that they're telling us that there is just yet, because what would that mean? Mm-hmm. But, you know, until then, I think the human element is still an essential component in art. It has to be, doesn't it?
I think that it is, but, you know, it's all we've ever known.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who say, you know what? Humans, get out of the way. This is the next evolution of what we were trying to do.
Well, and you've got, right. You've got the EU just passing some landmark legislation about AI, and I sent you the link in our super secret thing. You know, the riskier the AI, the more sort of the tighter the reins.
Well, that's great for the EU, but China and the US and everywhere else does not follow the EU rules. So are they just going to get left behind?
Well, that's a question, right?
Sure, we could stop making nuclear weapons. Doesn't mean everyone else is going to,
right?
You know. I mean, that's the frustrating thing about this is the unknown, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's always the thing. I always think about like history and the fact that everyone at any time, they didn't know how things were going to turn out. You know, it's 1915 and you're in World War I and you're a British soldier. You don't know that it's going to be over in 3 years. You know, you don't know that the flu is coming. You don't know that the roaring 20s are coming or the worldwide global depression or, you know, all these kinds of things. And we didn't know 20 years ago when there was all this utopian vision of what the internet could be, that it would just become this cesspool of everything that's terrible about the real world, just hyped up and shot into your veins every day on a thing that you carried around in your pocket.
Right.
I mean, that's just the reality. And lots of good things too. I'm not saying that it's all bad, but it ends up just reflecting things don't change that much. The medium changes, the message doesn't, maybe.
But I think AI feels different. It feels like something. I mean, you know, vibing off of the recent Oppenheimer stuff, it feels like something that big. It feels like as big as the sort of ushering into the atomic age. It feels like it could have.
And are humans drastically different level. Because of the atomic age?
No, but I would think that, I mean, we've seen from documentary footage and from books, many of the people who were responsible for those things wish they'd never taken that genie out of the bottle.
Sure. But that's, I think I'm of the opinion that that kind of stuff's inevitable. What are you going to, okay, you know what? Let's ban AI.
Well, you can't now. I mean, you can't. And maybe you couldn't, maybe you never could have, but you certainly can't. I mean, look, you had a big group of scientists that just wanted to slow it down for a little and say, look, let's pump the brakes for a minute and just see where this is going to go before we go headlong into
tell that to the person waiting for the pancreatic cancer cure that the thing is going to come up with in 2 years.
But let's not bring altruism into it.
I'm just saying that
to the people making billions of dollars.
Sure. Well, yes, that's definitely what it comes down to. But I'm saying if it didn't come down to the money, I think that there is potential in all this stuff.
Sure, there is. But I think you've you've got, not to make it political, but you've got Congress now, the administration is trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs for seniors.
Sure.
But you've got the pharmaceutical industry going, no.
Right.
No.
Of course.
We could help you for less, but we don't want to do that.
We can't make our money if we're charging less.
Right. So the idea that, yes, there is a bit of altruism, and yes, there is a bit of, you know, AI could solve, you know, problem X, Y, and Z, but don't think for a moment that that's not going to come with a hefty price tag.
Of course, everything always will. But like that, I mean, you know, the world is gray. It's not black or white, right?
Yeah.
I think from the point of view of art, are there people doing interesting things with these tools? Sure.
You bet there are.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Are they things they couldn't have done without them? Yes.
Yes.
100%. Are they things that could potentially replace things that took people a whole lot of time to do that showed skill and you know, craft and all the rest of it? Yeah. Will there still be people doing it the old way? Sure. Will they be as valued as those people think that they will be because they're doing it by hand? Well, you know what? Sure, there are people making chairs by hand, but how many people make a living making chairs by hand?
I think visually, one of the things that keeps coming up for me, and I'm looking at your basement shots, and I sent you earlier a movie called Godzilla Minus One.
Yep.
Won the Oscar for visual effects.
Yeah, I watched it. It's cool.
And this is a team of 35 people.
Yep.
Small, tiny, you know, did not have a lot to work with, but they made this incredible piece of work. And one of the things that I found interesting was talking about the iterations of the various shots and two things. One, lessening the number of people that they had to go through to get sort of sign off and approval, that the director, the VFX director or the director of the movie was talking directly with the artists.
Well, the VFX director was the director of the movie.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So that communication was key to producing the art. If we're looking at these shots of this basement studio at the moment, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you're using this more than I am, but there aren't a lot of tweaks you can make with AI. You can't be as granular about iterating as you can talking to a person.
To remove a few speakers from that desk.
Right.
As of right now, I mean, if I wanted to do that, that would eat up some of my attention that the thing has for what I'm saying.
Right. So at the moment, I mean, will it get there? Maybe. But at the moment, I still see so much value in the collaborative nature of making and sitting down next to the person and going, you know, well, look at the Collier video of Jacob and Tori Kelly working through that tune, right? Where they develop their own sort of shorthand in talking to one another, and they know what each other is. You know, Jacob will sing some little run and he'll go kind of like that. And she'll do a variation of it, not note for note. And he'll go, yes, exactly. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that gets lost at the moment in AI because it's not a conversation.
Absolutely. Right. But
the
maybe
creation is not a conversation.
But maybe what it is instead of the refinement, it's the initial blast of creativity, not creativity, but it's the initial blast. It's the input. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things you can do in these systems that I've started playing with is you can seed it with numbers so that if you run prompts multiple times, because it normally pulls a random seed, but if you give it the seed number, you get something very similar to the last one because you're giving it the same initial state. If that makes sense.
Okay. So if you give me an example, if
when I made this basement thing, I gave it a seed number of 425 or whatever it is. And I did another round and put in 425, I'll get something similar to this. If I just do another round, I may get something completely different because it automatically seeds itself to 862 or whatever it is.
So I don't want to eat up any of your cycles, but could you input that prompt, whatever, that same prompt again?
The one I just did, just to see what else
comes out.
The one
you just did, just to see what same words.
Sure.
What else is going to come out?
Sure.
Because I am fascinated by this as a previs tool. I am fascinated by this as kind of a rapid prototyping tool. But I have to temper that with the fact that every time I use it, I have to acknowledge that I'm stealing somebody else's work.
Will this be a... In the same way that kids nowadays have YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're a drummer or whatever it is, and you have YouTube, how much faster you can learn? Because you could just suck in all these different drummers and all these different... Right?
Yeah.
Do you think that this could potentially be an accelerator for, you know, the kids out there who are learning, you know what I'm saying? Like, is this,
it could, but the point is, yes, it could, but that monitor exists in somebody else's work somewhere.
Yep.
That speaker exists in somebody else's work. That exact speaker, the way I understand it, and somebody, you know, podcasted on taking pictures.
There's an image of that,
pictures,
and it got pulled out. It knew it was a speaker. And so now it like puts it in its collection of
speakers.
Correct
us if we're wrong, but the way I understand it, these elements are not being created. They're being pulled and manipulated.
Okay. So what I just sent you, what it gave me. It gave me three similar ones to last time. And also, person.
There's a person in one.
Yep.
Interesting. And this is the exact same prompt.
Exact same prompt.
Interesting.
Now, all of them are, they're all good. In this, I mean, her eyes are a little wonky, but like maybe the woman's eyes they stole it from are a little wonky, you know. They're all, by the way, isn't it funny? She's sitting in front of a microphone, but she's also got a head mic on.
Yeah.
Like these, it's these
it
kinds
like
of things
her
it doesn't understand.
On the TV behind herself.
Yeah. It just does, these, it doesn't understand stuff.
Right.
Because it doesn't understand anything.
Right.
It's just regurgitating. And maybe there's something really interesting in regurgitation. Let me ask you a question. Would you give more credit to the person using this tool to make these images or the person who made the tool that the person is using? Who's the artist here? Am I the artist or is the person who made the code for Midjourney the artist?
Man, that's a great question.
I lean towards the latter.
The person who made the code.
Yeah. They did something original. I'm not doing anything original here. I could sit here all day and make photorealistic, beautiful photographs, quote unquote, images day long. Like literally that one with the girl in the tree is the first thing I ever tried. And I think, you know what? Looks pretty freaking cool.
There are a number. Well, if you could fix the wonky hand, especially,
sure.
You could show that to a cross section of 100 people. And I think a fairly good sized number
would never notice
would think that that's a photograph.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, if you look at the progression of Midjourney, 2 years ago, that wasn't the case because it was still really kind of wonky. If you look at those progressions, it has gotten remarkably more realistic, quote unquote.
Yeah, they're getting this stuff. By the way, there were more in the woman in the tree. Interestingly enough, I sent you those. The second one, the woman, it's only her torso. The rest of her got lost underneath the weird airplane that's all scaled wrong. Like, it's just weird.
Oh, yeah.
It makes things feel really bizarre. But
that bottom right one is kind of cool, to be honest with you.
But the weird thing about it, first of all, I wrote right flyer in here, right airplane, right brother's airplane. it didn't understand what the Wright Brothers airplane is, because none of these look like a Wright Brothers airplane. No, I wanted a fabric covered, you know what I mean? Like wooden stick. It doesn't even know what that is. Right.
I wonder if you could put in, you know, something like a Sopwith camel or something, something more sort of maybe recognizable.
I figured Wright Brothers, Wright Flyer would be fairly specific. You know what I mean?
And it didn't know.
Now, so I guess my thing
Hold on a second. Yep. Imagine if you were on a team and this was a human generated piece, and you said to your team the exact same thing. I want the Wright Flyer kind of thing. And they came back with this. You would rip somebody
Flyer.
What? That doesn't look anything like a Wright. What are you talking about? Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Right. But I can't yell at anything here. But I guess the thing is that what this thing is doing is not what I'm doing when I'm enjoying doing what I do when I'm taking pictures.
Right.
This to me is not photography. This is not why I take pictures. Yes, ultimately, I'd like to make a good final product that I'm proud of and I like. But that's not why I do it. I do it because I like the process of doing it. The process of doing this is me sitting in front of a thing typing in, you know, nerds in basement, and I get pictures of me and Jeffrey. Right? Like, that's not a process I enjoy.
No, the effort for you is the art.
Yes. That's the fun.
The art is in the effort.
Right. Yeah. Or hiking up to the top of the mountain with your camera and a tripod to get the picture. Like, that's the fun.
Yeah, it feels like this is all payoff. And
cheap.
And
it's like giving a gun to a baby. You know? Yeah,
you didn't earn any of this.
You didn't earn it.
Well, but, okay, yes. But there has to be, obviously, that's not an issue for many people. They just want the result.
Sure.
They don't want to have to earn it. They don't want to have to.
And for commercial use, once they figure out copyright nonsense, which I'm sure they will eventually, you know. This all you're going to see is tons of this stuff. Not only are you going to see a new ad for whatever, Jeffrey, you will see an ad that is generated by AI for you specifically based on keywords of the things that you like.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not only that shoe, but it's that shoe in the kind of truck that you drive.
It's going to be Minority Report.
Yes. Worse than Minority Report, because not only will it be, hey, Jeffrey, wouldn't you want to buy these shoes? But it will literally be a picture of you wearing those shoes in the truck that you own.
Yeah.
Right?
That terrifies me.
And it'll be generated really on the fly for you. Now, where does that leave the people who take pictures for Nike? Well, they're gone. You know, where does it leave the designers of Nike shoes? They're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll still have the people putting Nike shoes together because, God forbid, we can't make a robot that puts shoes together, you know?
Well, what are the kids going to do all day? Well,
yeah, you know, and, you know, this is a photography podcast. So, yes, I'm leaning on that side of it just because I think that's what is most interesting to the listeners.
But I think you could say the same thing about, you know, art, about painting, about writing, right. About music.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. Like, you know, like my friend Gideon said, you know, like, why can't they make the ones that take trash out? Why do they got to take away things we like to do?
Yeah.
And the reason is, it's not that they're taking away things you like to do. They're making the things you like, they're making the output of the things that you like to do cheaper.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the market for these things, the bottom drops out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, listen, I'm playing with this thing. Is it fun? Sure. If I could get high-res versions of these things out of here to use as backdrops to put real people into, would that be fun and interesting? Maybe. You know, like basically build virtual sets with it and then shoot people and light them and stick them in it. Like Richard Tuckman. Remember the guy who does the miniatures? You know, basically, but instead of shooting the miniatures, which is kind of cool, you have this thing create the sets and then you shoot people and put them in there. Could that be done? Sure. I'm sure somebody's already doing it.
What is the current state of technical limitation on, like, what's the biggest you can spit out from this thing?
I don't know a good answer to that. From my experience, they're relatively small. Let's see.
And is it always square?
I think you can tell a ratio too. I think I may have said square for at least one of those.
Okay.
Max image size. I think what they do is they output them at whatever it is. Yeah. 2048 pixels square. And then, oh,
that's the biggest.
Oh, no, wow. 1024 is the biggest. And then it ups it to 2048.
Oh, really?
With basically it's just upscaling it. It's not making it a higher res.
Right. Interesting.
Midjourney produces images up to 2448 square or 2720 1530 widescreen using a beta upscale redo feature. This was as of August of last year. So yeah, they're not crazy
not
big.
High res. Yeah.
You know, I was able
just
to upscale
high res enough to allow you to believe it.
Somebody used gigascale and gigapixel and brought it up to 6400 and said it was still really great quality. But I mean, again, for what? What, you going to make big giant prints of your weird Asian woman on next to an airplane? I guess you could. But like, what are we doing here?
I want to make construction drawings from those basement pictures.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I don't know where this all ends up leading. You know, where does it get us? Where do we end up at the end? And I don't have a good answer for that.
How does it affect the human experience? In what positive? What's the net positive?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Why are we doing this? You know, it's again, not to go back to Jurassic Park, but you know,
why not?
Your scientists were so excited as they didn't ask why. You know, what's the one?
You were so preoccupied with whether you could, you didn't ask whether you should or something.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, to your average person is like, oh my God, I can make these amazing pictures by typing in four words. Great. But I don't know, Bill, shut up. There's going to be hundreds of thousands of jobs for prompt engineers.
Right.
No, there won't. Because you know what? There will be AIs that are creating the prompts. That's what it's all going to be.
You're going to enjoy some short-term success until they figure out how to eliminate you from the mix.
It's going to be AI all the way down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does this stop me from pulling out a camera and taking pictures? No, of course not.
If anything, Bill, I would argue the other way.
Yeah.
I would argue that it should light a fire under those people who are making art to go make art.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it stop me from wanting to spend more money on gear because maybe I won't be able to pay it off? Sure. You know, there's something I was going to ask you. The past couple of weeks, you've made a offhanded comment about wanting to get out and take pictures again because you're not taking pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why haven't you been taking pictures?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, I don't have a great answer.
Okay.
It was a thing where, you know, a day became a week became a month sure. became 10 years. I do really enjoy seeing the world through a viewfinder. I really enjoy that, you know, and it's a very different, you know, I know people take photos with their phones and that's great, but I like the isolation that a viewfinder can provide. I don't like holding the phone out because I can still see everything around me and I don't want to see everything around me.
Yep.
I want to, and this is, you know, me waxing overly poetic. I want to get lost in the isolation of the viewfinder. I want to be restricted in that way I think in some ways it forces me to focus my brain. Right. Because if I'm seeing everything that my field of vision can see, I'm noticing, considering, thinking about all of that stuff. Yeah. But if I can isolate and there's this little black square, I mean, this little square that's surrounded by black and all I can see is just, and I'm holding my hands over my eyes right now so I can just simulate this. There's almost like an exhale of removing some of the noise. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, art is editing, right? So, but I mean, you personally, I think that I think that concentrating, because that's a mental pursuit, but limiting distraction is a useful thing for you.
Agreed. You know, and it's gotten to a point now where I just want to take a couple days a week. And it, you know, it's sort of like back in high school. It didn't matter what I was photographing because it was an excuse to get me into the darkroom. Now I don't use a darkroom any longer, but the idea is still the same, that to get out into the world and edit what I see and curate what I see rather than seeing and experiencing all of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I wanted to try an experiment of either wearing noise canceling headphones just with the noise canceling on, so it just kind of, you know, kind of sucks me down into kind of a bubble, mm-hmm. or to have some sort of, you know, nondescript kind of you know, ambient music playing in the background that just gets rid of even the noise of the world, so that I can not control, but minimize the visual noise and the auditory noise of the world, and just see where that takes me. I don't know. So I'm sorry I don't have a really great answer for that. I really have missed it lately.
But it wasn't a one day you put down the camera and refuse to pick it up again. It's really it up less than you did the day before, and it just kind of
went that direction. Just became more and more gradual. It was a gradual decline.
Sure.
You know, and it got to a point. It's, you know, it's sort of like I did the same thing with reading. You know, I just started reading less and reading a little bit less and reading a little bit less.
Sure.
And then, you know, you're like, I haven't read anything in like a year. What's going on here?
Right.
So I started reading and set time aside for myself, you know, that I'm going to read for an hour a day and not online. I'm going to read an actual book for an hour a day. And
those,
I think that
those are the ones made of paper.
Right. Okay. I think I need to do the same thing with photographing. It becomes a little more challenging because, you know, unless I want to just wander around my neighborhood, now I have to go somewhere. So then there's a little more time involved. There's a little more effort involved. But there are still so many areas of DC that I've never been to, or only been to, you know, I've only seen what I can see from the metro on my way to somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's time to just get off at Rhode Island Avenue and go walk around for an hour. And see what's there, or, you know, get off on at Brookland and go wander around and see what's there.
You have there's no excuse for you not to do that.
There's zero excuse. It's just making the time.
Well, I think you need to get on that. I think you should go this afternoon.
Well, I have therapy this morning, or once we finish with this. In fact, we got to motor a little bit.
You do that virtually, or you do it in real life?
No, I go there. I go in person.
A couple things before we finish up then.
Sure.
I got the little, that Godox Lux Junior.
Which looks flash. So cool. It looks so cool.
You know, I wish it was metal. Like, I wish it was like, you know, I feel like if I drop this the wrong way, it's going to go smash, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's neat.
So small. What could it have cost them to make that metal?
Well, yeah,
not
exactly.
Much more, you think?
Yeah, yeah. I will say that it's only controllable in one stop increments. So it's like full, half, quarter, eighth, down to 1/64th power.
What's the guide number? It is at full power. Does it have any punch to it?
You know what? That's a good question for which I don't have no, it's not. I mean, the thing is that it's right there on the camera though. So it's, you know, it's not going to be great for really far away, but mm-hmm. it's right in front of you. You know what I mean? Was it $59? $59 right now.
Is it really?
Yep. Guide number 39, 40 feet at ISO 100.
$59. It was 79 or something.
It was 69, I think. It's 59 currently on B&H. Maybe I should return this one and
rebuy it for $10.
Rebuy it for $10
less. It's going to cost you an hour and a half to get there and back.
You know,
$5
it comes in colors too. I didn't know that.
Does it really?
It comes in green and white and dark green and pink. Weird. I need to try a little more playing with it. It is very much not my style, as it were. You know what I mean? The whole idea of like on-camera flash is not my look at all. So it irks me a little bit. I'm like, I don't know if I like that. But maybe I just need to lean into it and play with it a little bit more. Because there's people.
Is there any sort of clip-on diffuser or anything for it?
No, not that it comes with it. But you know, part of that, I think it is just sort of, you know, you want it to look like an on-camera flash. But there's lots of pictures you see where it's basically somebody just has a 7-inch reflector on a strobe sitting next to the, you know, holding it up next to the camera. Somebody's taking the picture. A lot of fashion pictures, you know, where it's just like one hard light near the camera. And I wonder if you could get similar, not quite that, but I mean, this is basically what your guy is using. Who's the guy that you really love? The guy, Greg Williams.
He's basically using, if you're listening, let's talk.
He's using a little guy like this.
Yeah.
You know,
he's fantastic.
Yeah. And he uses it just to like give a little bit of light. I wish it was a little bit more than one stop increments. I think it would be a little more useful, but it's very, it's a cool
little
thing.
Is it hot shoe only or is there a cable input?
There is a sync cable input, a little tiny.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could, it looks like a handhold.
It looks like a micro jack. You know what I mean? Like not 1/8 inch mini, but like the 1/16. Yeah. I guess you could hand hold it and hold it out a little bit, but then again, what's stopping me from taking my pictures and just holding my little Godox right next to my camera? You know what I mean? Like if I wanted to do this and didn't want to have another thing.
I think it's probably just the weight of it.
The one thing I will say is that I normally, because of the way the Pentax is, I carry it upside down on my hip. So the top of the camera is against my hip versus the other way around.
So you'll knock that thing right
off.
So
I can't hold the camera that way with this flash on it. So when I was walking around with it, I had the flash in my pocket. Because I'll take it out and put it on, you know? So I will say that that's just a little weird thing just specifically to me. But the other thing I wanted to say was, did you see any of this nonsense about the edited pictures of the Princess of Wales? Have you seen this stuff?
I have seen the headlines, but I care so little about any of it that I haven't pursued it beyond seeing it flip by in the newsfeed.
What kind of blows my mind is that there are people who think that all of these pictures of all of these people weren't edited before, right?
they're just snapshots out of camera that get uploaded to the royal feed.
Yes.
Wake up.
Oh my God. Like the Christmas pictures and all this kind of stuff. Half the things, it's like face replacement from another photo shoot and stuff. It's like serious work getting done. Even on the ones, you know, you see all the pictures that Annie and all these other people took of all these famous, you know, these royals. And it's like, every single one of them is photoshopped to the edge of within an inch of its life. The thing is that she seems to claim that she's the one who was doing it. Now
she was doing the editing.
Yes. Now I don't know. You know, maybe Catherine Kate is a really great Photoshop person. This woman Paris Martineau that I listened to on some stuff. She's a journalist. Wrote a tweet something along the lines of, are we really supposed to believe that Princess Kate has an Adobe Creative Cloud membership? Which I thought was pretty good.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I just think it's, yeah. So if anybody has any thoughts on that, I would get a kick out of hearing about it. Do you have somebody in mind for Photographer of the Week since we got to get you out of here?
You know what? I don't, actually.
I mean, we have a few people in our thing here.
Yeah. Is there something on the document? And by the way, just to reiterate last week's choice of Todd Schick, he was tickled about that. That was really great.
Yeah.
It was really great.
Yeah. He's good.
Yeah.
He's really, really, really good. So,
although it was funny that right as we mentioned him, Instagram went down.
Yes, that was sad. But if you didn't get a chance to go see him and follow his work, you really should, because it's very good. I'll tell you this. Davis Newman.
Oh wait, somebody sent us an email about
Davis Newman sent in Jack Delano.
Yeah.
Who was originally
one of the FSA guys, right?
Yes. Yeah. He's a WPA, United Fund and FSA photographer, so like from back in the day. Born in 1914, died 1997, age of 83. Jack Delano, born Jacob Ovcharov. Ovcharov.
Ovcharov?
Ovcharov. Jacob Ovcharov?
Jacob Ovcharov.
Yeah, I'm terrible with spelling or pronouncing these things. But anyway, he changed his name to Jack Delano because, you know, why not? Shot for the FSA, shot for all these American kind of things. And like, this is, you know, classic American immigrant story, right? Jewish family from what is now Ukraine. Him and his parents emigrated to the United States in 1923 on a boat. And then he studied music composition, viola and composition, and photography and graphic arts. And then ended up shooting all this photos for the FSA and stuff. And if you even go to his Wikipedia entry, which I will send to you, Jeffrey, if you don't have it there. Yeah.
If you're into like Walker Evans and Dorothea Lange and that whole style of documentary photography from the early 30s and 40s and stuff, you're gonna love this stuff.
Yeah, but look at the one here from in the roundhouse of the Chicago rail yards color photograph.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Look at that.
Like yeah. Thank you. Please.
Looks totally like Midjourney. No, I'm kidding. Stop it.
But you know what's pretty cool too? If you zoom in on it, it's like a pretty high res photo. You could actually print that sucker out. But yeah, look at the beautiful
big locomotives.
I mean, there was something about color back in the day, just the way that the emulsion picked up different colors and chose different things. And I use a Kodachrome preset in Capture One. It's not the same.
Have we ever used Winston Link?
I don't know. I'll have to do a search. We'll put him in the thing for next time.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So don't look.
I think we have, actually.
Yeah. Because I'm looking at these trains, these locomotives, and that was Winston Link. I think we have because we talked about his big lights.
Episode 311.
Yeah. There you go. 311.
But yes.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So Jack Delano, absolutely lovely stuff. Go look him up.
There was something about, I was talking about this with Adrian the other day. It's not just the color of the stock. The color of the world was different then. The colors.
Yeah. The dyes that they used in paints and stuff. Yeah.
Yes. The fabrics were different.
Paint was different. As much of the Saul Leiter stuff and the other guy. Who's the other guy?
100%. Fred Herzog. Yeah.
It's the color.
Any of those guys.
Because you see these old cars at old car shows and stuff, and you're like, oh, look at that weird yellow that is, or the weird green. And it's like, they don't make things like that anymore. Everything's really saturated now in like a glaring kind of way. Like there's a softness to colors back then. Even if they were bright colors, there was like a softness to that. You know?
Bright, but muted somehow.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, As lots of people have said, you know, it's just give the photos you take now time and they will start looking old. But yeah, anyway, so put that out there.
There's another link at the ICP that's got a bunch of his photographs, both black and white and color.
I will put a link in the show notes.
Beautiful work.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. I wonder how many of those pictures back in the day. Because he's also like a lot of these pictures are drummers and typesetters and barbers and steelworkers, and a lot of them are like Black Americans, right? So like he was out there shooting. It seemed like he was like really focused on the 1930s Black American experience, you know, which is like really cool. But I wonder how many of these are really they feel like they're planned. You know what I mean? Like there doesn't feel like a lot of, they just caught this nice picture of this doctor. It's like, no, just stand there for a second and hold up.
Right. How much was found versus assigned?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this feels like, oh, let's go take a picture of this guy and all right, sit here. We'll light this, whatever. You know, they're basically canned, not canned, but you know.
Look at this one that I just sent you. Frank Williams. Mr. Williams came to Chicago from Pocahontas, Mississippi. He has 8 children, 2 of whom are in the U.S. Army. Look at that.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful work.
Yeah. There's another one in there of Miss Ella Patterson, 102 years old, and her great-grandson. And this would be in 1942. So 102 years old means she was born in 1840, which means she was born.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, people were still slaves. Crazy, crazy world we live in. If you want to get a hold of us, podcast at ontakingpictures.com. You can send us a voicemail, 929-390-1916. And let's see what else. Oh, at Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris on Instagram and Threads for as long as we still are on Instagram and Threads. I did a bunch of work on the On Taking Pictures website. Last week to try to fix a bunch of broken links and things. So that is in better shape than it was before. And if anybody needs to find anything, you can do searches and probably find it there.
Love it.
By the way, I couldn't get HostGator is using an old version of MySQL on there. And I tried to get them to update it. And they were like, oh, yours is like in the last batch. We started updating them like 4 years ago. And yours is like the last server to get upgraded. What? And we don't know when it will be upgraded. And I was like, what?
Okay, well, then I don't know when I'll pay you again.
Exactly.
How about that?
Yeah. Anyway. Got anything else?
No. Thank you for being here as always. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Keep those cards and letters coming, kids.
If you want to stick one of those green pieces of paper in the card or letter, you know, we're not going to. No.
What?
Wait, what?
What?
We'll talk to you later.
A minute now. All right. We'll see you later. Thanks for being here.
Bye.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many fools, it's plain to see something. This way, say what you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out, so I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have for too long, it's clear to me the this way, say what you wanna say. I know what you will say. Will